Jeff and Eric are best friends, as only two film critics could be. They bonded over movies and the Portland rain. It's the kind of romance only seen on TV. Then one day Jeff had to move away to far off San Diego, where it's sunny every day. Eric had to cry, he said, why oh why? We have to find a way to make sure our friendship doesn't die. We'll have a long distance relationship, the kind you see on TV, so you know it's legit. We'll watch our movies alone and then we'll meet online, record ourselves a podcast and everything will be fine. Now we have Movie BS with Eric D. Snyder and Jeff Mayer. It's Movie BS. These critics are best friends forever.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Baron Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Baer. Here's my sidekick, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, I'm the host of this show, Movie BS with Baron Snyder. My name is Eric D. Snyder. I'm the only host. Here's my guest this week, Jeff Baer.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Hey, absolutely. It's been we've been talking about it for a long time. It's about time that I finally got a someone to talk to.
Yeah, there was
finally lined up.
Yep.
People have gotten tired of just hearing me doing both voices.
That's what the internet said.
Yeah. People who were listening last week and heard us talk about our injuries, my wrist hurt. And you may not know, if you're not on Twitter, that there was a resolution to that problem. I would hate for any of our listeners to be left wondering how that turned out.
That's right.
It's the carpal tunnel syndrome, surprisingly enough, an occupational hazard. And I went to the urgent care because it hurt really bad. And the doctor said, oh, yeah, that's carpal tunnel syndrome. And he was pointing out how the wrist, it was my left wrist, he's pointing out that it was swollen, and there's some other things that were different about it from the other wrist. I could see no difference between the two wrists. Yeah. My two wrists looked the same to me, and he was pointing things out, and I said, well, I guess that's why you're the doctor. Because I could not detect visually a difference between them, but he could.
Do you believe him?
I guess. I mean, yeah. Sure.
Doesn't sound like you do.
Well, with my own eyes, my left wrist did not look swollen compared to the right wrist. But he gave me medication to reduce the inflammation, and it stopped hurting when I took the medication and when I wore a brace on it. So I have to assume he knew what he was talking about.
Do you wear the brace when you type now?
No, I wore it for a couple of days, and then it stopped hurting. And so I've got the brace now. I guess if it flares up, I gather it'll be one of those things that will flare up occasionally, probably.
Yeah, for the rest of your life.
Yeah, probably. And then if it gets bad and constant, then you can do the surgery or whatever where they put in new tunnels, I think, in your carpals or whatever.
That's right, yes. Your tunnels are clogged.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But for now, it's manageable because it hurt that couple of days, and now it's okay.
And I want to just thank the listeners. Goodness, three, four dozen gifts came my way when I told you guys about my cough and my cold. And couldn't have been nicer. So thank you all for that. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the road to recovery.
Oh, good.
Taking it day by day. But yeah,
this is like we've done more than 250 shows, and I would guess that for more than 200 of them, you had a cough or a cold.
No,
that's my guess.
No, I've talked about the potential of having one probably like 200 times, but maybe. I've only been sick probably like three times on the show.
Maybe. Are we counting hungover? Remember the time you were
hungover? Hungover just once. Only one time in the early days.
That was so great.
Oh, that was. I really should do it. I should do it again for like the sixth anniversary or something.
It's a good idea.
Since we already missed the fifth.
Mm-hmm. We do not have a sponsor this week, but people can sponsor us if you contribute to the Perpetual Lunch Fund. There's a link at moviebs.com.
Mm-hmm.
And no new iTunes reviews either, but that's another thing we can remind people to do. If you write us an iTunes review, we'll read it on the show.
That's all the housekeeping, right? Let's get to the meat in this meal.
Here's this movie called The Age of Adeline. Do you suppose they're trying to glom on to the popularity of Avengers Age of Ultron? Like, get some confused people at the theater?
Well, now, see, I'm joining the club. This was not a superhero movie you're saying that I saw.
No, it was not.
Are you sure it wasn't a superhero movie?
Well, she was kind of Wolverine.
She wasn't that hairy.
No, but she doesn't. But she doesn't die is the thing. Like with Wolverine,
that's a good point.
The age of Adeline. Spoiler alert: the age of Adeline, 107. Just saying. She was born in 1908.
They get to that fairly early on in the movie, so
yeah.
I don't think you've ruined everything
that's
about
true.
This film.
That's true
for people. But yeah, this is a young woman who. She seems
to be a young woman.
And, you know. Oh, she was a young woman at one point. She was. Right. Long ago. And she had an accident, and it gave her this power. And she didn't quite understand this power. And
you know how when you're in a car wreck and then your heart stops beating and you get struck by lightning?
See, here's the thing I loved. There's a narrator in this film. Mm-hmm. And the narrator explains it in a way when you're like, all right, I'm in. You found a loophole, and I'm on board with your logic. Thank you very much.
In a way that kind of sounds scientific, but I think also knowingly that it's not scientific, but it sounds like a book narrator telling you, and here's what happened. And
yep.
Okay, sure. Now she doesn't age.
And I would say, I mean, this is absolutely at the heart a romantic drama that occasionally – tries to disguise itself as a little something more, a little fantasy, a little science fiction. But that's just occasion. Like the meat of this
fantasy,
is,
yeah.
Okay, I've said meat twice. We're going to have to start the show over.
Okay.
You know my meat rule.
I would hate for you to say the same thing over and again. But at the same point, so now she doesn't age.
That's right. And so, you know, it's difficult. For a woman. You know how women love to age? Well, this one can't. And so she's, you know, kind of bummed about the whole thing.
It's not that they love to. It's that people expect them to. So when you see That's a woman right. who's like 50 and she looks like a 28-year-old, people are like, what? Mm-hmm. And so, so she has spent the last several decades, has to change her identity now and then just to keep people off the trail and basically not letting anyone get close to her except for her daughter, who is now very old, and she is Ellen Burstyn. Oh, the woman is Blake Lively, by the way.
It is Blake Lively, and I love this proper maturity that she gives with this performance.
She kind of
– It's quite elegant and fairly timeless, and it even made me think, well, obviously she's doing it because of the time period that Adeline grew up, but I'd like to see that kind – of a woman or even man, if so choosing, in future roles, just in general, even if it doesn't necessarily fit with the time period. I just very much liked it.
She carries herself like a woman, who's been around a long time and kind of speaks with refinement and elegance. I like that Blake Lively, I think.
Now, do you know Michael Huseman?
No, and so I assumed that he was from Game of Thrones, which he is.
He is. He's from Game of Thrones. He actually replaced an actor on Game of Thrones because they were beefing up a role, I guess. And they were like, let's get somebody better. And then he was also on Tremé. So I've been familiar with him. And normally he plays somebody that's a little bit either greasier or slimier. But here he plays a man who, he's pretty much a perfect gentleman, man of your dreams kind of guy. Lots of money, but just wants to do good things with it. And
he and Adeline.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I would say this is where it slightly gets muddled, because what you can tell the movie is trying to do is show us that this could be a really special love for her. But it seems just kind of nice and ordinary. And I don't know if they necessarily did a great job of setting up the pieces of her. Saying, like, how many men in her past did she say goodbye to? Is it the second one that's only mattered in this large amount of time?
See, I didn't feel like they were trying to set this up as being a particularly great one, but more that it was, this is what happens. This is the latest guy that she has encountered who her whole struggle is, do I get close to this person? And she's always pushed people away. So I didn't feel like this was, this is my soulmate. Whatever, it was more like, here's another good
interesting
possible love, and will this finally be the time that she stops running and settles down and reveals her secret?
And then he has a third date with her after some tough work. He's really got to work at this.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a third date, what do? You bring her home for a weekend to meet the parents. Mm. That's what you do on your third date, period. That's what the rule book says. And then suddenly Harrison Ford's in the movie. Spoiler alert. I did not know Harrison Ford was in this film.
I know he was in the film because he's like listed fourth in the IMDb credits. And so I was surprised that he didn't show up until an hour in.
Yeah. And that gives the movie a little bit more juice. Like, because otherwise it was just kind of like, all right, I'm on board. It's all nice. It's fine. Gives it a little bit more juice.
Yeah, I like the feel of it. It is a, like you said, it's a romance. Ultimately, it doesn't feel like a chick flick, like the sort of movie that usually gets lumped in that category.
Right.
Because a romance is aimed more at women, but it is not. It's not an especially romantic or lovey-dovey or froofy, frivolous movie. It seems more like a grown-up movie.
With that fantasy
element,
yeah.
But not overdone.
It reminded me. I liked Time Traveler's Wife more than this, but it had that tinge of like, okay, you're trying to make a little something more than just the chick flick.
Yeah, yeah,
and achieving it.
Yeah, because I think every time that they did a nod.
To how she would actually figure out how to live that long. I was totally intrigued with that. And I wanted more of that. But then again, I think that's kind of the point of getting the guy to sit down and watch it, maybe, is that sci-fi element. And I was craving that. I loved all the little nods. What I didn't necessarily love were the dialogue nods of like, whoa, it's like she has nine lives. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like that to me was just like, all right, come on, settle down on that. Right. Any particular reason why she's a maniac behind the wheel? Does that fit this character at all?
You know, good question. Maybe
all right, just curious.
Yeah, maybe she has a death wish.
Yeah.
Well, this all happened because of a car accident. Yeah.
Right. Right. Good. We're doing that a lot this week. What's going on with us?
I have my theories. I like that. I don't remember what I was going to say. Go ahead.
I didn't necessarily love the third act as much as the beginning of the third act led me to believe I would, mainly because when reveals are made, it feels like there's a little bit more focus on the relationship than I would want for the curiosity of it all. And of course, that's simply because I'm sitting down to what wants to be a romantic comedy at its core.
Romantic drama.
And romantic dramedy, sorry. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, it was good. It was nice. I liked it. Harrison Ford was good.
I remember what I was going to say. I feel like they did a good job making this problem that she has relatable. Even though it is not a problem that I can relate to, the problem of being timeless and never aging and not dying. She feels it. You buy that she has lived a long time and that she is very. This is a lived-in situation for her.
Completely, and not only that, she goes about it in ordinary ways. It's not a film. Kind of like that Bradley Cooper movie, Limitless, where it's like, okay, how can I take this to its fullest? It's more about like, how do I work through this difficult problem that some people would surely kill for, but I have it and I didn't ask for it, and now what do I do?
Because it affects her feelings and her relationship with others, as opposed to being a story about what she can do with her magic powers.
That's right. Yeah, 6 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, it's a B minus. The Age of Adeline.
Age of Adeline. And Blake Lively, she, you know, good stuff here. She can hang out. She can do more stuff.
Is Gossip Girl still on?
It is not. I didn't make it to the end of that series.
I knew you would know.
My wife did finish it without me. No. And she's she's married to actually, I don't even know if they're married, but I know that she's with Ryan Reynolds, and they have like a 4-month-old kid.
Oh, I knew that. Is that who Ryan Reynolds is with? Blake Lively?
Yeah. Yep.
Huh. Well, they're both very
pretty. Yeah, tough break. Scarlett Johansson, then Blake Lively. Poor Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He'll get the hang of this.
They are married. They were married September 9th, 2012.
Oh, okay.
So that child is not a bastard. Good job, Blake and Ryan. I have an issue with Blake in that I feel like there are too many people named Blake. When we were kids, nobody was named Blake.
That's a good point
now
so far.
Now you got this Blake Lively and then this Blake Shelton, who is a man. And Blake Shelton, I think he's on The Voice. Is he a judge on The Voice?
Is it called The Voice or The Voices? Oh, no, wait, that's the Ryan Reynolds.
The Ryan Reynolds movie, yeah.
Hang on. I need to go back to your original issue, though.
Mm-hmm.
The number from my recollection, I wrote this down, it went from zero and now it went to two.
Yes.
And you have a problem with that leap.
I have a problem with it because they're two different genders and it just makes it confusing to me. Is it a man's name or a woman's name? I feel like it's a man's name, Blake Edwards, the director. It's a man name, so I feel like Blake Lively needs to not be named Blake. That's my issue.
Wow. You are pulling out the punches this week.
They're my rules. I make them up.
Yeah, sincerely. All right, there we go.
Now
that's the segment of the show saying Eric gives it all he's got.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Something that he's got.
I'll tell it like it is with this name.
Tells
Blake.
It like it is, and he's got a craw somewhere. Mm-hmm. Is it craw up your butt? Is that where craws
are? Something sticks in your craw. The craw being part of your throat esophagus area.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's not like a – what's a craw? Is a craw – it's also a crawdaddy is a shellfish?
Crawdad is – yeah. I don't know why that's called crawdad. Maybe it has to do with the craw. Really, it's the it's a crayfish, also known as a crawfish.
Oh, okay.
I suspect that's more of a pronunciation thing.
We should probably work on the title for this segment because that – it feels like we didn't rehearse that part. And you and I worked through that last night about how you were going to go off on Blake Lively, and I feel like I butchered it. So
usually we rehearse very, very carefully.
Yes.
Now this other movie called The Water Diviner, directed by Russell Crowe, there were two screenings here in Portland. Both were at the same time as the only screening of something else. So I didn't see the Russell Crowe movie, but you did.
What did you see instead?
One of them was Age of Adeline.
Okay.
The other one was whatever was – oh, it was Unfriended last week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Somehow through the magic of having, I guess, two different publicity firms in San Diego, somehow by that magic you were able to see this movie.
I can't wait to come back for that. Anyway, The Water Diviner. You know how everybody's like, Russell Crowe needs to direct.
Nobody said that. Nobody ever said that.
So then finally they did.
Mm-mm.
And this, I guess, is a story that he's interested in. So then he directed it and starred in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about this guy who's a water diviner. So the movie starts with him and his dog in the Australian outback, mm-hmm. Like 1919.
Okay.
And he's got his little stick things.
Oh, the divining rod, the water.
Yep.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
One in each hand.
Right.
Little things. And he's got this feel and he's got this hunch. And so then he digs and he finds water.
Because it's hard to find water in Australia because it's a godforsaken wasteland where humans are not supposed to live.
Yes, that's what they say on all their posters.
Right.
But so what do you got here? Oh, I know. I know what this movie is. It's about a guy who's like saving the Australian outback through finding water. This is going to be interesting.
Okay.
Maybe he's going to be considered spiritual by some. Like, who knows what's in store for this?
Let me guess. Instead of being that, he goes to Turkey to find his missing sons after the Battle of Gallipoli.
Man, does it take a turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what he does. He's got lost boys, and his wife was really sad about it, and so then he has to go find his boys.
didn't really bother him, but his wife was upset.
It didn't seem like it bothered him as much as it bothered his wife, and then once it was very obvious how much it bothers his wife, then he decided he'd go do something about it.
All right. Fair enough.
And it's trying to be this throwback movie of like he's a gentleman – and he comes into town and The woman who runs the hotel that he stays in is gives him the cold shoulder, but maybe there's something there. I mean, after all, he was unhappy with his wife for quite a while, so why not? And there's a cute little boy involved, and he's like, Mister, let me take you around town, and stuff like that.
You do a great impression of a young Turkish boy.
So there's eventually, and this is the problem. I needed a lot more paragraphs at the beginning of this movie to explain who all is involved and what's going on here, because it's World War II, Battle of
World War One,
Gallipoli, World War One, World War One. Mm-hmm. Greeks, Turks, Australians, English. What were their motivations? What's going on? Ottoman Empire. I remember that name from school, but So there's all that, and somehow on occasion, Russell Crowe just kind of has unspoken powers of insight that I guess might have to do with the fact that he found water at the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
But the film never explains it. And instead, it's about him finding his sons, the possibility of another son being a prisoner instead of being dead.
Oh, does at some point, does Russell Crowe go to a Turkish prison? Have you ever been to a Turkish prison?
I have not. I have been clean. Have you?
That's good times.
Oh.
Contrary to what you've heard.
Anyway, and then there's a Turk that helps him, and there's an eventual nod to the reason that he helps him, but it's pretty light. The most interesting thing I found was in 1915, when the Australians were going to war, they would have a tuba player. I think was it the Australians in the very beginning? I think it was. There'd be like a tuba player marching into battle as well. Really? And I just thought that must be the worst job.
Like instead of like a drum and fife, they have a tuba player?
Well, they also had the drum.
Okay.
And some other ones were a little bit more lucky and they had guns. But there was also a tuba player.
Ah, the gun. The most magnificent musical instrument there is.
So anyway, it's really just the most plain, ordinary thing that's dumbed down on occasion and not explained on occasion.
But apparently not dumbed down enough because...
But no, like, that's the thing. It's dumbed down in the sense of, like, do you get it? It's all about this. It's all about this man finding love instead of his sons, which it's just dumb. It's a dumb movie. It's 4 out of 10.
I'm bored with it.
It's terrible.
4 out of 10,
it's terrible to spend almost 2 hours with that movie. But again, it's just super ordinary. It's not like offensive.
And Russell Crowe.
It's like Russell Crowe owed somebody a favor. So he started in this movie. And then he must have owed somebody else a favor because then he directed the movie. But like, there's nothing interesting about his direction or his lead character. He's like trying to prove that he's a nice, normal guy. And that's not what I want out of my Russell Crowe.
That's an interesting theory, but repaying a favor doesn't sound like something Russell Crowe would do.
I don't get why this mattered to him, this movie in particular. And it's not a movie that would exist without him behind the helm.
Right.
It doesn't feel like, not on this scale anyway.
Okay. And this other one, Clouds of Sils Maria, which I missed because I was the wrist doctor.
So there's a famous actress, and she's played by Juliette Binoche.
Mm.
And her assistant.
Juliette Binoche. Have I mentioned that her name sounds like a feminine hygiene product? Binoche.
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 It sounds refreshing. Binoche.
It does.
You'll have to excuse me. I haven't binoched.
It doesn't sound refreshing anymore.
Well, not when I say it. Anyway, so she's a famous actress.
Famous actress. Not going to do X-Men. Not her. She wants more. She wants something meatier. Man, I said it again. Kristen Stewart plays her personal assistant. And it spans years. It starts with she's about to honor this director who clearly gave her the role of a lifetime long ago. And he suddenly died. And she still honors him. But clearly, she doesn't necessarily like to play in this business, but it's a wonderful job of like seeing a famous actress be aware of the business too, about like whether it's social media or anything else like that. She's curious about this. She's aware of her presence in the Hollywood stratosphere, all that sort of stuff.
All right.
Kristen Stewart, I would say it is probably her like most relaxed, mature performance that I've seen. There's no biting her lower lip. There's no odd nervousness for no real reason. It's really good here. And the relationship is easily what carries this movie and is interesting. The running time's a little bit long. It's just over 2 hours. But it goes through what it would mean to this woman to play then the opposite role, the role that in this film when she was really young and 20 and got her big break, she's now old enough to play the older woman in that film. And somebody's remaking it.
Okay.
Or I'm sorry, on stage. And somebody's wanting to do it, and she's convinced to do it. But then it's all about that pretty much just inner turmoil of what does this mean to be a middle-aged actress? What does this mean? How do I feel? Right. All that sort of stuff. And it's good. It's mainly good because of Juliet and Kristen Stewart. Chloe Grace Moretz is then the younger one. In this future, and they have a couple of interesting scenes, but it's honestly a great chance to see three women do really good work that has very little to do with the power of men in Hollywood.
Nice.
So there you go. It's an 8 out of 10. I totally recommend it. Again, it's just a little bit long.
8 out of 10. All right.
Yeah.
Then.
Kristen Stewart, one of the better supporting roles that I've seen in this young year of 2015.
People have been saying that she's a good actress in some things.
Here's the thing. She simply did blockbusters that the majority of us didn't find terribly interesting.
Yeah, but
that's
she
all
also
that happened to Kristen Stewart.
Not all, because she also was not interesting in them. In the Twilight movies, she was a dud.
Oh, she was in the Twilight too? Wow.
But it's like, I mean, you got to remember, like, all the people that were in the Star Wars prequels who were good actors, like Ewan McGregor and Natalie Portman, but who were duds in those movies. So sometimes people just get stuck with
bad
material. She was a dud when she was Snow White, too. She's mostly been a dud. Let's be honest here.
That's you know what? That's true. She wasn't a dud. I'm a sucker for Into the Wild. That's one of my problems. Mm. Simply because she was in it and young and good.
Right. But no, I'm perfectly willing to accept her as a good actress.
You know, what was
no problem with that?
The movie with Dakota Fanning, was it the
On the Road?
No, they were the Singers. She was actually good in On the Road.
Oh, the Singers, the Runaways. She played Joan Jett.
Yeah. That was another one. I mean, she has a list of good. She was honestly On the Road was something that just unfortunately didn't register, but it easily could have, I thought.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Yeah. Anywho.
All right, Kristen Stewart, good for you. So that's the movies.
I won 3-1 this week. It's not a competition. It's not a competition, Eric.
Won what?
I saw three and you only saw one.
Oh, yeah, right.
Do you hear that?
Your dog barking? Yeah.
He's having a dream.
He's adorable. Oh, that's cute.
This is for those of you who don't live with me. My dog Austin doesn't actually bark very much.
Yeah, he doesn't.
It's
really.
fairly rare that he barks.
He's
so it's funny.
Is he having a bad dream?
Yeah,
is he scared.
I'm not going to wake him up though. Maybe he's chasing somebody. Maybe he's defending my honor. I don't want to ruin that for him. It's an adventure. He'll be safe when he wakes up.
Fair enough.
I like nightmares.
So those are the movies, and now it's Question of the Week.
It is time for Question of the Week.
Because Russell Crowe directed that movie, and so we were like, what other actor made a movie that was good?
It is what we were like.
We said it better than that, though.
Yeah.
Specifically, what we said was...
What's the best directorial debut by an actor?
There you go.
I'm gonna tell you mine right away.
Okay.
Because it's also Justin's. Gone Baby Gone. I was so happy with how good this was because I was on Team Affleck and I was slowly having to get off that train because there was no reason to still be on it.
Right.
And then
well, it was going to some weird places.
It really was. I didn't want to go there.
No.
I'm a family man. But anyway.
Yeah, that kind of surprised everybody.
Yep.
It was a swell surprise for us all.
Yeah. And he's I'm going to say he's got the streak going.
So far,
Of only above average movies.
Yeah, he has yet to direct a bad movie.
And keep in mind, people, look through whoever you think your favorite director is. That's a very hard streak to maintain.
To never
think about how many
movie,
people
yeah.
started with above average and have been able to maintain it.
Mm-hmm. Also think, though, that he's only made like 3 movies.
So far, so good. But yeah, I mean, like Christopher Nolan, J.J. Abrams, like they were all at this point on the list at one point and eventually didn't work out.
Christopher Nolan hasn't made a bad movie. What movie did Christopher Nolan make that was bad?
I'm saying Interstellar is not above average.
It's definitely above average. You're crazy.
Well, wait, what do you mean? Are you giving it a 6? What is this above average talk?
B minus?
Okay, let's change it. Really good.
Really good.
So an 8, like it would be BS approved.
Mm.
All of Ben Affleck's movies are BS approved.
All right, I'll give you that. And Interstellar probably is not.
Oh, thank you for letting me backtrack a little bit. I really appreciate you. But just in that one instance, not in general.
Someone else named Eric says Rob Reiner directing This is Spinal Tap. Yeah,
I thought that was his first. And I haven't officially made it through that movie, I don't think.
You haven't. We watched half of it once and we got distracted.
It happens.
Was that his first? That was his directorial debut.
Yeah. I've heard the story of that. Like, it was just tons of footage that they didn't know what to do with. Is what they ended up doing. Yeah.
And then, of course, the thing about Rob Reiner is sad. He went on to make – then he made Stand By Me and The Princess Bride when Harry Met Sally, Misery, A Few Good Men.
It's insane.
The American He's President. The best. Oh, and then rumor has it, The Bucket List and So It Goes. Oh, and do you remember in So It Goes last year?
Is that Diane Keaton and Michael Douglas?
Uh-huh.
No, I don't remember.
And Alex and Emma.
Huh?
Back in 2003. It had to do with...
Is that with Luke Wilson?
Luke Wilson and Kate
Are
Hudson.
You serious?
And it was like time... Wow. Like she... No, that wasn't the time thing. Oh, we kept seeing the story she was writing. That's right. They would be in the story she was writing because she was a writer. Anyway, he's made a lot of bad movies, Rob Reiner has.
Yeah, it's odd.
At some point,
you almost
want
to just ask him the basic question of like, hey, why did you decide to make bad movies after being one of the best?
I think he decided to make generic movies for middle-aged white people.
I guess.
He just, I guess
old
it's
white
an easy,
people.
Old white people, yeah. It's an easy market, I guess. Easy audience.
I've never seen Night of the Hunter, and it was many people's answer.
You should see Night of the Hunter because it's a very good movie. And
Robert Mitchum's uncredited as a director on this film. Found that interesting.
And it's the only movie he directed, too.
Who? This guy? Oh, Robert this guy. Mitchum. Yeah, yeah. What yeah, is yeah. this? No. Well, again,
well, no,
Mitchum's
not,
on...
not Robert Mitchum. Robert Mitchum
right.
directed something. Yo, Charles Laughton directed it.
Yes, but I'm telling you, there's two other directors that are uncredited but listed as directors for that film.
Yeah,
I investigated. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they directed a couple of scenes. No, the director really was Charles Laughton. And and it was the only movie he ever directed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good.
One and done. So, yeah, I'm going to put that on my radar for a while. I was looking at this list for a little bit, and I was like, oh, my gosh, there's some movies that have slipped through the cracks. Speaking of Slipstream? I'd never heard of it.
Directed by Anthony Hopkins.
In fact, when I looked it up, there's another Slipstream directed by the guy who did Tron – and that is not this movie that they're referring to. But now I'm interested in both Slipstreams now.
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins' Slipstream from 2007. I do not know this movie either.
Yeah.
Was this a real movie?
Yeah.
Because I was watching movies in 2007, and I did not see it.
Gordy says Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which is definitely on my rewatch list. I need to see that film.
Mm-hmm. George Clooney.
I had forgotten that Penny Marshall's first film was Big.
Yeah,
that is a heck of an answer. That is a great start.
Yes.
What are you doing? Are you not believing this answer?
I'm not believing that was her first.
Steph says it was. Why would he lie to us?
It's wrong. Her first movie was Jumpin' Jack Flash, 2 years earlier.
Steph. Oh, man. I can never trust that guy ever.
See?
Well, and not only that, it goes with your theory. Steph. Girl's name? So then we can't trust him for that reason as well, or no? I mean,
well, he might. Is he foreign? Is he a foreigner?
I don't know.
What's his last name?
He works in Bangkok, but how am I supposed to know?
Steph really should be short for Stephanie. I'm just saying.
Man, correcting him twice on one podcast. Well, that's rough. He's just trying his best.
I know. And I don't mean to single you out, Steph. But
Marion says that thing you do. Easily a very watchable film. But I wouldn't call it great. Very watchable, though.
No, you know, the thing,
always be in the mood for that movie.
The thing you do is I find I'm not always in the mood for it because that movie has no conflicts. The story has no conflict. And so, like, it's pleasant and whatever, but, like, it's not one I can rewatch over and over again because there is nothing to it.
Okay, this is what I mean to say. You can easily watch – you can come in, watch 10 minutes, and then go about your business.
Yes,
it's background noise, and
it
it's good
for
background
that.
Noise.
Sure, yes. I'll give you that.
Steven says, Robert Redford, Ordinary People.
I've never seen that movie. Have you?
I have seen it. I've seen it a long time ago. Add it to our list.
Okay.
For the exciting return of Jeff Baer, Portland, Oregon.
Ugh. Are you really going through with that?
Yeah.
You were taking this joke too far.
Kevin Costner, Dances with Wolves is a great answer. Although for me, I don't think I knew him as an actor before that movie.
Oh, really?
I remember begrudgingly going to Dances with Wolves. Was that 89?
Yes.
I remember begrudgingly going to that movie. I was like 12 or 13 at the time and falling in love with it. But I don't feel like I had any experience with Kevin Costner before that. Didn't see Silverado. Wasn't allowed to see Bull Durham.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, wait. When was Field of Dreams? No, that was after. Field of Dreams was like 91, right?
Field of Dreams was, where is it? 89.
Oh.
89. It was the year before Dances with Wolves.
Oh.
It was 1990.
Well, maybe I do have
that. Your story has a lot of holes in it.
Oh, whatever. A lot of holes. Go figure. My memory.
He'd been in The Untouchables, too. Well, you probably hadn't seen that, maybe.
Oh, no.
In 87.
Yes, I had.
Right. Nothing about your story makes any sense. When I say Kevin Costner, who do you picture? Who are you thinking?
I had definitely seen Untouchables because it was the first time I had a rooting interest in the Oscars that
there
I can recall.
Go. There you go.
If that story's true. Oh.
Kevin Costner, yes. Stuart wants to know, does Terry Gilliam's direction of Monty Python and the Holy Grail count? Yes, Terry Gilliam and Terry Jones co-directed that movie. So we'll count that, sure.
I didn't know Paradise Alley existed. Did you?
Paradise Alley directed by Stallone.
But wait. Wasn't Rocky before this? Yeah, this doesn't count.
But he didn't direct Rocky.
Oh, I forgot.
He wrote it. Yeah.
Start it. Oh, it's
Paradise Alley, 1978. My skepticism is that this is a good movie. I'm just skeptical that it's good.
Isn't Armand Asante, is that who's the like third lead in that movie?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, you know, he never makes a bad movie.
It's about three Italian-American brothers living in the slums of 1940s New York, trying to help each other with one's wrestling career, using one brother's promotional skills and another brother's con artist tactics to thwart a sleazy manager.
Doesn't this sound great? It really does sound great. I got to see that movie. I've never seen Play Misty for me.
Oh, Clint Eastwood, yeah.
Yep.
By
the way, Andrew wins as far as stories go. Bronx Tale. Robert De Niro's A Bronx Tale. It was written by Chaz Palminteri, based on his one-man show. He attended Ebertfest this weekend and saw the film on the 35mm print. It was Martin Scorsese's personal print. Ooh. It was one of the two remaining prints, the other belonging to De Niro.
Wow.
That's good stuff. It is a good film.
That's cool. Yeah, that is a good movie. And that's cool that they got Martin Scorsese's personal print there at Ebertfest.
Ty Brown. Zach Braff's Garden State. Touchy answer. Touchy.
People, polarizing, as he says.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
I really liked it. The first time I saw it, I was in love.
I agree that was a good directorial debut for an actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
The things he's done since then have been hit or miss, but I think that was
something that maybe you guys haven't seen that you totally should. Away From Her, Sarah Polley, her first film. Actually, see everything that Sarah Polley's directed, which I believe is only two films, so it won't take you very long.
Yeah, I agree. Away From Her, terrific. She's good at what she does.
Read Richard's answer.
Reed Richards.
You do it. You do it.
I don't see him.
Reed Richard. That sounds like a secret identity for a superhero.
Reed, I thought you were saying Reed Richards. That is the Fantastic Four guy is named Reed Richards. I thought you were saying Reed Richards. You want me to read the answer from the man named Richard?
Yeah.
Yes. Peter Mullen's Orphans is a great film. He'd already won the Best Actor Award at Cannes when Orphans was released. He's very talented. Yeah.
Keep going.
He says, whenever I see Peter Mullen pop up in a bit part in some commercial film like Harry Potter or War Horse, I always point him out and say, that guy there, that's Peter Mullen. He's directed some great and powerful films. Peter Mullen is probably only in this silly film so he can raise money to make real cinema. People get bored of me talking about Peter Mullen, but he is a great actor-director. Go on, Google him.
I think they probably also just get annoyed that you're talking during Harry Potter and War Horse.
Seriously, shut up. Let me watch War Horse.
Everybody, stop the movie. This is Peter Mullen.
I can't remember if I've seen Orphans by Peter Mullen.
I don't think I have.
But
do we do it? Do we actually add it to the list?
I have. Yes, I have seen. Yes. Oh, I did see this.
What's going on?
Three brothers and a sister meet in Glasgow to prepare for their mother's funeral. Yes. I do remember that. That is a good movie.
Is it?
It's a black comedy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm. Add it to our list.
Okay. Orphans. Good good answer there.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
I don't know if it really matters.
Okay. That's the best kind of questions.
When I throw that out there, add it to the list.
Yeah.
Do you actually add things to a list? Or do you just, is it lip service?
No, well, kind of a little of both. I do have a list somewhere where I make a note of movies to watch. Not necessarily that I need to watch with you, just that movies, I should watch this sometime. So it will get added to a list.
Are you? You are not my assistant. Is that what's happening here?
I am not your assistant. You've made a...
interesting.
An error in judgment there.
All right. Well, I'm going to start paying you less.
Okay, well, that's only fair.
Do you have an answer?
I need to get to the bottom of this Orson Welles thing. Because a couple people said him for Citizen Kane, but that was not the first film that he directed.
Oh.
Well, kind of.
What?
Okay, these others were shorts. Okay, all right. All right. He made a film called Too Much Johnson. I know, right? And this one was recently restored or something. Okay, it's only 40 minutes long. All right, so it was not a feature. But it was supposed to be a feature. That's what it is. It was a feature. Many parts of it were lost. And so that's why it wound up being so short. So we'll take Citizen Kane with an asterisk. It was the first feature that he finished and was released, but he had made this other thing before. Anyway. No, I don't have an answer.
Hang on. I don't think it should count.
Why not?
It's his first acting role.
What do you mean?
It's his first time acting in a film, Citizen Kane. I don't think it should count.
He wasn't a known actor. He was not an actor before. Well, that's a good point.
That's a great point.
He was an actor, but he mostly stage and radio.
Yeah,
so.
And these people, here's the thing. They did not watch him on stage.
Some people did.
Yeah, but not these people.
Who are these people?
Not our people.
The people who are saying this?
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah.
My finger at Jeremy Kirk and say he personally has never seen Orson Welles perform live.
No, but the people who saw Citizen Kane, many of them had perhaps seen him perform. They may have considered him an actor, stage actor, and a radio actor. Back then, a radio actor, that was big. That was big business, being a radio actor.
All right.
But it's a fair point.
Fine. Question of the week for next week. Oh, wait, do you have an answer?
No.
You really don't?
Mm-mm. No, I like it. These are all good answers. Well, not all of them. Penny Marshall was a bad answer because it was wrong.
All right. Question of the week for next week. Mm-hmm. You guys know what time it is, don't you? You know what time it is. Eric, do you know what time it is?
Yes. It's time for the summer blockbuster challenge, almost.
The blockbuster? Really?
It's time for the summer block blah 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 blah.
The summer blockbuster challenge happening next week. This is the big deal of all big deals on this show.
This will be the fifth time we've done this.
Fifth time, and it's 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
So this is clearly it's not going to be for all the marbles because one of us is going to want to hang on to some marbles after this competition. Sure. But it's for a lot of marbles.
You know, I gotta have marbles.
Have to.
Yeah.
Walking around marbles, everybody needs them.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. When you get into a jam, what if you don't have your marbles?
Exactly. But yes, this should be for many of the marbles because it would be the tiebreaker.
That's right.
So yeah, next week on the show we'll do our draft where we will each choose 10 films coming out this summer. What we need now is to know what the stakes of our bet should be.
That's right.
And so that's what we're asking you. What should the stakes of our bet be?
In years past, I've had to shave Eric.
You had to shave my beard. Just my beard.
Shave your beard.
I had to be a vegetarian for a couple months.
Vegetarian for way too long.
It was terrible.
How many months?
It
ended up being like 2.5?
Not even that. Because what's Dylan's birthday? No.
That's right.
I don't remember when. I really don't remember.
It was like 2 months.
October sometime.
October
it was almost
27th, I think.
Okay.
I think maybe it was October 27th.
It was almost 2 months.
For some reason, that sounds familiar.
And then last year, you had to wear an embarrassing shirt at Fantastic Fest that I made for you.
That's right. That's right. And, I don't remember the other.
I couldn't shave or trim any of my hair for like 2 months. And I got all shaggy and beardy and hairy. It's terrible.
All right. So those are the past things. We want something different. And here's we want two outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
We want one that takes place during Fantastic Fest because both of us will hopefully be going again.
Right.
And then the other one that takes place in Portland somehow once I make my mighty triumphant return. So
the point is we need to come up with the stakes for the bet.
Stakes. Oh, stakes.
We should involve steak. See, that's an uncreative friend bet.
The loser has to smoke a pack of cigarettes. That would be awful.
That would be awful.
That would be the worst.
I was going to say the loser has to take the winner to a steak dinner. That would be like an ordinary sort of bet that friends would do. We don't want to do that.
We need something a little bit more.
Something better than that. Something more interesting than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of our bets so far have been punishments. It has not been that the winner gets something. It's that the loser has to do something.
Maybe in this situation, one of them could be for getting something and one of them could be for like the punishment.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But the punishment usually has to be delivered by the winner, which is sort of a prize for the winner, getting to punish the other. There's a sort of a sad codependency at the root of all of it.
It really is.
Yeah, so give us your suggestions for what our bets should be.
Yeah, it'll be on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviebspdx, which you can find on moviebs.com or at oneofus.net because they are kind enough to host our show.
Oh, yeah, and you can email us, moviebspdx@gmail.com, anytime you want, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The email lines are open.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is a heck of a deal. You got to pay extra for that kind of treatment.
Yep. Is this where we play a game?
Sure.
What
do you want to play?
Let's play some character casserole.
Okay. Next week, for Box Office Challenge, it'd be fun to go back in time. Eric and Jeff's Excellent Adventures.
Maybe we will. Maybe we'll do that then.
We should do that.
So you are pulling up the Box Office Mojo list of the highest grossing films of all time, adjusted. You've saved this page as a bookmark, I'm sure, by now.
You know what? I should.
Right?
I should.
What we're going to do, we're going to choose three movies, and we're going to choose a character from each movie, then we're going to make up a movie with those characters together, And
1 to 200.
All right, these are the 200
as
highest grossing films of all time, adjusted for ticket inflation. Your first random number.
Yes, sorry.
43 is your first random number.
Oh, you'll never get it.
Really?
1970. Made $100 million.
Love Story.
Airport.
Ooh, Airport. Okay. I don't know any characters in Airport. Can it be a plane? Can the airplane be the character?
Thank you, yes. Wait, right. Is there?
I assume there's an airplane. I assume there's an airplane in Airport.
Have you never seen Airport?
I don't think so. Yeah, maybe. There's an airplane because it's all about like it's a disaster in the skies.
Okay, but here's the thing. I'm pretty sure there's an airport in it. Are you sure you want to go with airplane?
How would an airport be a character? Don't be ridiculous.
All right, my bad.
So there's an airplane.
Now, this is an airplane, just an airplane.
Right.
Or is it like, does it talk?
No, it's just an airplane, a passenger right. jet. Whatever sort of airplane is it at the center of Airport.
Got it.
Next random number, 41.
Oh, weird. 1984.
Mm-hmm.
$234 million, now adjusted $557 million, rated R.
1984, rated R, Beverly Hills Cop.
Bam.
Nice.
Axel Foley.
Done. Sure.
Of course.
And then finally, 196. Whoa. Way down at the bottom of the list.
2007.
Okay.
$256 million, now adjusted $304 million. Money just doesn't buy what it used to in 2007.
No. 2007 is
rated R.
Rated R. All right. That does change it then.
There's a dog.
A dog in it? I Am Legend.
Yes.
Nice.
Wow. I mean, I gave you more clues than usual, but
yeah.
You just got 2 out of 3.
The dog is what gave it, yeah.
Yeah. It's easily your best work ever.
Oh, for
but
sure.
But again, I led you.
Yeah, the R rating for 1984, because 1984 I would have first said Gremlins or Ghostbusters or a few other things, but yeah, the R. Anyway, what's his name in this movie?
I'll look it up.
Will
I want
Smith.
His exact name.
Will
I think
Smith.
His name is Legend.
Hmm.
Isn't it? No?
I don't remember.
I don't know.
I can't remember if we liked I Am Legend or not. Did we?
We did, but we disliked the ending quite a bit. Mm. And then it was just kind of like, it was all right. I think we were both like in that 6 or 7 range.
Except that this movie came out before we knew each other. So we probably did not talk about it.
Robert Neville. What a weird name. Mm. Let's call him Bob.
All right. Bob Neville.
Let's call him Bobby.
Bobby and Axel Foley.
Actually, let's call him Rob.
Are on an airplane. Rob. And...
Let's see,
so we have what are I Am Legends? Does he have powers? He's not a superhero, right?
No, he definitely isn't. He's just
survivor.
A survivor.
Axel Foley, of course, is a fast talking, smooth talking guy. And I Am Legend is used to not talking to anybody. He's been alone a while.
Yes.
So they are very different personality wise. And so when they have to work together, get stuck.
Oh, wait.
On
they have to work together on the airplane because if it goes under 55 miles an hour, no. what happens on the airplane? What's the issue?
Is it a terrorist thing? A hijacking? And they got to thwart
it? What about this? What if it's a prequel to I Am Legend?
Okay.
And like it's the disease. Somebody's going to release the disease.
Oh. And so he is Axel Foley. Well, he's a good guy. He's a cop.
This doesn't make sense. I don't like this. No disease.
Okay, no disease.
Remove disease.
All right, not that. Scratch that. They're on
and
the plane.
Keep in mind, this is kind of funny because Axel Foley's doing stuff.
Right, so it can't be too – it could be a funny hijacking.
Yeah.
We've had
and actually,
those.
I think occasionally Will Smith was charming. So he was kind of funny.
Oh, sure,
with
yeah.
the dog and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but so what is the so the but the hijacking? There's got to be more to it than that because
right, it's a mistaken hijacking.
They thought they were hijacking a different flight, or they didn't mean to hijack it.
Yeah, they made a mistake. No, that doesn't work either. Does Axel Foley eventually have to land the plane?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's something. So we've got okay. our ending.
He eventually has to land the plane because I Am Legend guy.
He has to do it on the streets of Detroit, and that's one of the reasons that Detroit looks so bad right now.
Because Axel landed because a plane there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Knocking buildings over and stuff.
Uh-huh.
All right. All I've got...
Mm.
All I have is hijacking, and then Axel has to land the plane.
Man, this is not a good character cast.
So we're having having trouble here because Will Smith's character is not memorable from I Am Legend.
No, he's really not.
I don't remember anything that he did other than
have a dog
survive and have a dog.
Weren't there
vampires in that movie?
I think they were vampires.
They're kind
of
vampires.
Maybe they were vampires.
Maybe there's vampires on the plane.
Okay. Or Will Smith thinks there's vampires on the plane.
Okay. And then the movie
thinks there's vampires.
Then the movie can be called Stakes on a Plane.
I got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because of vampires.
Well, what about this? Vampires, mm-hmm. Some of them have been known to turn into bats and fly.
Oh, yeah. That happens a lot.
And flying happens most of the time in the sky.
Yes. I'm with you so far.
And bats are in the sky.
Okay.
So... That's all I got, really.
Bats on a plane? Bats on the plane?
I'm just saying there's bats that are then... Maybe it's just a lot of bats, and Will Smith's like, that's vampires, trust me.
Oh, the plane is going... The plane runs out of fuel, and Axel is going to try to land it, but he can't. And so Will Smith gets his vampire friends to alternate into bats, and they carry the plane the rest of the way.
I'm starting to think you didn't see I Am Legend, because I don't think they were all buddies.
Well, by this time they are. They've become friends.
All right.
Yeah. And so they turn into bats and they fly the plane home on their backs, their little bat backs.
Let's just move on.
All right. That one didn't turn out great. So
no. But it is baseball season, and you know you have to step up at the plate, mm-hmm. and you got to keep swinging, people.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's what we did. That's what we just did for you.
We lost that one, maybe, but we still there'll be a 150 more chances to play this season.
161.
Or whatever. However many there are. There's a ton. There's way more than there need to be.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, you know what it is? The other sports don't play enough. That's actually what it is. Football, once a week. Oh, sometimes we need a week off. Lazy. Go play a doubleheader, why don't you? That's a man's game.
All right. It's been Sports Talk by Eric D. Snyder. Hey, guys. Everybody should go to Facebook because we have posted an email from our number one fan.
Or certainly our most thorough.
Dedicated?
Paying thorough? Attention fan.
He wrote us a very long email about us, and I loved it.
Because we'd asked you guys, we'd asked if there's anybody who's been listening from the beginning, who's heard all mm-hmm. the shows, and we heard from a few people who had. And Ken revealed some interesting things some trends we had not noticed on our show. For example, I did not realize that when we play Pitch Me, that we don't choose actresses very often. That surprised me.
I kind of knew that. I would have said that I had picked more women than you, but he said it was the other way around.
He said that you're pretty much hopeless. I can remember specifically choosing Jessica Lange before because I had just been watching American Horror Story. And I remember choosing Meryl Streep before.
Oh, you're the best.
But those are the only two specifically that I can recall. But I can't really recall any other men that I named either. But I take your word for it, Ken, that we have been sadly lacking in going with the lady female woman actresses for Pitch Me.
But there's many more factoids, if you will. And thank you so much for that. That was really nice to read. And also, perhaps most importantly, if Eric or I die, you should probably talk to that guy second. Wouldn't you say?
You think that maybe, like if we die under mysterious circumstances?
That's right.
So you're interesting. So you assume that great affection automatically leads to creepy stalking and murder.
Hey, I said second. I think first would be the other one of us.
Sure, obviously.
So if I die, people should investigate you first. Same goes for me.
But then probably your wife and then this guy.
Nah, I just don't think she would do it.
Yeah, that's what they always think.
Uh-oh. Yeah. All right, I'll be on my toes, mister.
She's got you right where she wants you.
Oh, that's true.
She's a doctor. She could poison you slowly over time and completely get away with it. Doctors know a lot of ways to kill someone.
I have been losing weight since like the last couple months.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Probably she's slipping drugs into your food.
Oh, my gosh.
She's killing you gradually over time.
Ugh. Not again.
Mm. And then we also, when we asked about this, we had a listener. Let me, I got to find the thing here on the Facebook here.
Braden?
Yes.
This is, we're going to end the show with this. And I liked this quite a bit. This is from Braden. This may sound sappy. Okay, it will definitely sound sappy. I had been a regular listener for the first year, but had missed 6 or 7 episodes during early summer the second year. In August, we received news at 2 p.m. that my brother had quite tragically died unexpectedly. So we explained it to the kids, who fortunately or not couldn't understand what we were trying to say, perhaps due to the mature subject matter, or maybe just that we couldn't get out a full sentence without big blubbering sobs. Packed up our van and started the 12-hour drive home from Sacramento to Washington. Driving long hours after news like that is harder than I could have imagined, with nothing but the mountains to keep you company as days roll into nights. I tried inspirational talks to console me and audiobooks to distract me. Neither worked. I couldn't focus and wasn't ready to be consoled by uplifting messages. Then I remembered that I still had the Movie BS podcast backlogged on my phone. It sounds funny, in a bizarre way, that two guys arguing about movies and making up childish games should provide comfort.
Childish games? How dare you?
In an existential crisis, but it did. The material was light enough that if I lost focus a bit, I could pick up right back, and funny enough that I could let go and just laugh sometimes. And the chemistry between the two of you helped me feel as though I had my bro there with me, and we were bantering back and forth. It was perfect.
Aww.
I've always loved the show, but in a time of personal crisis, the show became a bit of a lifeline for me. It gave me enough lift to get me up to Washington, where true healing could begin through family and faith and the tender mercies of so many friends. See, I told you it was sappy.
That is a very touching story, Braden. Thank
it
you
is.
For sharing that with us. It's,
yes.
That is nice. That's very nice.
Yeah. It's very nice.
And then he adds, he says, come back next week for the time when I used a printout of snide remarks to pick the lock on the safe at the bank and become rich beyond belief. So that's very nice. That is that's flattering to know that we were involved in helping you feel better during sad times.
Yeah.
And we mostly encourage people to listen to the show only during sad times. Because if you're in a good mood already when you hear the show, it is going to counteract that.
It'll probably take a dip.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're feeling lousy, somebody else was saying on Facebook that he has trouble sleeping unless there's some kind of noise.
That's right. So we are his noise.
We're his noise. So, you know, we're glad that Zach said that. We're glad to help put you to sleep if that's what we're useful for.
Yep. He meant it as a compliment.
No, absolutely. That's fine.
That's how he meant it.
Yeah, you know, we should offer. I don't know where Zach lives, but we should offer to come to his house and just like stand next to his bed and talk to each other as he goes to sleep. What if that would work in person?
Yeah.
Oh, he lives in Chicago. Up for a trip to Chicago.
Road trip.
Yeah. All right, Zach, we're coming to your house to talk you to sleep. Thank you for those lovely sentiments.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to one and all for listening to this show. Let's recap what we learned today. We liked The Age of Adeline.
We liked it just enough.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty decent.
Yep.
And then what's that other thing that you saw?
The Water Diviner.
Oh, yeah. Russell Crowe. And then The Clouds and then of Sils Maria.
Yeah. Bother.
Bother. You should bother with that.
Yep.
You gave that one 8 out of 10, didn't you?
Yeah, 8 out of 10. So mm-hmm. So to recap for the three movies, you can bother, don't bother, and bother.
All right. And then for question of the week, tell us what our stakes should be for our bet for the summer box office challenge. And we learned not to do a character casserole with a boring character who doesn't have a personality.
And let's not forget, I mean, one of our characters was an airplane. That could have been a problem.
Yeah, too. The plane didn't really add much to the story, did it?
We should be allowed, if neither of us have seen the film, Maybe we should be allowed to pick another number.
You know, we should have made it. We should have made it a talking plane. That would have helped.
That's what I asked. But you didn't,
I was trying to keep it realistic.
That's okay. That makes sense.
That's my mistake right there.
Yeah, right.
So that's all then. Until next week, for Movie Yes with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.